The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on pgatour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you. It is the 19th of June, Wednesday, and we're all getting ready for the start of the next event on the PGA Tour, coming off of a wonderful, dramatic, exceptional, spine-tingling U.S. Open finish at Pebble Beach. And congratulations to Gary Woodland for winning his first major, his fourth PGA Tour event. And it could happen to a nicer guy. And a lot of stories to talk about when it comes to the U.S. Open. We're going to be joined shortly with by Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel to talk about his encounters with both Gary Woodland and Brooks Koepka and a lot of other guys that he talked to at Pebble Beach during the U.S. Open. We will look forward to the Travelers Championship. TPC River Highlands is the location, and Bubba Watson, the defending champion. A pretty good field, too, because as we always talk about, it's always a challenge to get a good field when you're not a major or some of the events that the top players almost have to play in, and this falls into that. But the Travelers are doing a good job following the U.S. Open, having a very, very good field there in Cromwell, Connecticut. Frank Bassett joins us, as always, from the Nashville studios. How are you doing today, Frank?
You know, when my name was mentioned, the bells and tinkles and fairy dust and all that in the background.
That happens.
That was strange. Spine tingling? Spine tingling?
Spine tingling. It was to me.
It was really good. It was very exciting. Coolest thing I've seen in a long time is Gary Woodland sharing with her in his post-round press conference, sharing with Ann. Is it Ann? Amy, the young lady that he met at in Phoenix. That was pretty cool that he said that I channeled your energy. You know, he used her energy to win it. And then yesterday on the Today Show, here's Gary Woodland with her and the trophy. And it was, what a sweetheart of a man he is. And, you know, it's not just a chance to do something with somebody for show. It's for heart and for real. And for that, Gary Woodland, good on you, pal. Congratulations.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. And a huge win. It was a little tense, spine dangling in my case, for to see those guys come down to those final few holes and whether Woodland could hold on. It's always interesting when a guy has never won a major before to see him in that position. He had never held a 54-hole lead going into a final round of a major, and to see him in that position and whether he could hang on for dear life if he would keep the pressure on. And I think we saw what we see pretty much now all the time on the tour and in majors. Even if these guys are inexperienced, if you will, in that position, the mentality of golfers is not to play it safe and not to. That shot he hit on 14,
oh my
which
God.
Was a 3-wood from about 270 that had nothing but tragedy written all over it when he hit it, because there's that face of that bunker right in front of 14.
Oh yeah.
That if he hits a screaming 3-wood into that face, it might still be in there. And yet it just carried it in. I mean, just a phenomenal shot. But that's what these guys mentality wise they have to come up with. They have to pull those shots off because they're like, I know I've got Brooks Koepka behind me. I've got other guys that are, I don't even know the guys that are making birdies and birdies, and I've got to keep the pedal to the metal and try to do what I need to increase my lead, not just hang on to it. And congratulations to Gary Woodland, because he did exactly what he needed to do. Ended up having a nice little cushion thanks to a nice putt there on 18. But it was pretty tense at 17 and 18. How about the shot on 17? I don't know if that's even a better shot. Probably the chip he had off the green.
I think that's a highlight reel shot forever. It really is. Yeah. The chip shot off of the front of the green to the back. Perfect. Just pin high there. Tap in. Unbelievable. Didn't even take a divot on the green. I mean, he clipped it perfectly clean. Hardest shot in the world there.
14 and 17. The difference. Because
yeah.
Power shot. That he has to hit a 3-wood 270, get it high enough to land soft on the ground. The other one, completely different, is just the most finesse little shot you could ever ask anybody to hit. I don't have either of those shots, Frank.
I don't think any of us do. I think very few have those shots. Then the next best thing was when he walked off of 18, and there's his mom crying and his dad and the big hug. And oh, my gosh, it was just fabulous. It's a shame his wife, of course, couldn't be there because she is pregnant with twins. So, wow. What
good
a great U.S. Open.
There.
You know, here's something we talked about yesterday out at Bluegrass, my club Corp, of course. all of us sat around and we're talking about the PGA Championship was the U.S. Open, and the U.S. Open was the PGA Championship this year. I mean, it just was total role reversal and course setup and difficulty, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think because, once again, and it comes up every time, so I guess now we're educated enough, we should understand this, that a links-style course is really of weather, and that's about where it starts and stops. And if you have the weather, as we've seen at Pebble Beach a lot of times where the guy's pants are almost blown sideways, we've seen it at British Opens and Open Championships before too, but when it isn't the weather, those golf courses can be had. And this is a really low U.S. Open score that you would never predict it. I think I predicted 4 or 5 under. Jordan Spieth said at the beginning of the week he would take 3 under right now and go home. That wouldn't have helped much if he finished the 3 under anyway. Everybody thought, well, if the wind does what it can do and the weather is what it can be at Pebble Beach and those kind of courses, it's a different golf course. And they just saw it kind of lay down for 4 days. Good for them. I mean, it's a good break to have because then it didn't factor into the play. But yeah, the USGA, I don't know. You think they're a little bit bitter? Do you think they're a little?
No.
I think they take it personally.
I do.
When the scores are too high, I think they get a little bit like, I don't like that.
I don't think so. I think they had to this was penance for the past 2 years. The course was not the story this year. Wow. The course was not the story. And that's the key. The players and the level of play was the story. And that's what a U.S. Open's all about. I think they expected some wind, and they just didn't get it. And they expected some sunny skies and not marine layer every day. So that kept everything soft. They didn't expect that. So, fooled you. Mother Nature wins again.
Because you wonder, too, about different shots. And going back to 14 for Woodland, could he have hit that shot if he has some wind? If it's hard and dried out more, right? And that ball lands like it does, it could have gone totally off the 14th, the back of the 14th. Could have been ended up bogey. I mean, there's a lot of things that would have been possibly different had the weather been different, had the conditions been different, and yet it wasn't, and he was able to hit that shot. So, you're right. It wasn't a story about the golf course other than it being Pebble and the drama and the history and whatnot of scenery of Pebble. But it wasn't we didn't see a Mickelson hockey move. We didn't see a lot of things that we normally, although we did see Patrick Reed break a club.
That technique, Tim, that was perfect technique. Yeah. Over the knee, wasn't perfect. His knee was perfectly in a 90-degree angle through the entire impact. Yep. And the sound, it was just perfect. Fox did a good job.
Move on that one. Yeah.
And here's the other thing. Fox did a great job.
Yeah,
the Fox team did good, and you're a broadcaster. I mean, big time broadcaster. You can critique it, don't you think they did very well after all the hell that they've taken over the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think they did. I think they've kind of gotten their game together, and they changed. Right? They had Greg Norman. They had a few different announcers. They've changed the team up a little bit, and I think that they knew that was going to happen. They're going to have to tweak things a little bit, and I think they started out trying to be a little too fancy.
Yeah,
and people were just like, just show me some golf.
Azinger didn't hurt. Yet. You know, that was kind of like that's a shoe in. He did a great job.
Yeah,
good coverage.
Yeah.
So and the Golf Channel did a great job too. And you know, Todd Lewis, who is a good friend of this show's and a good personal friend of ours, is he did a great job in the interviews, and he'll be up next, I guess, won't he?
Yeah.
Sometime
today.
We'll
talk to him.
Talk to him
and get his perspective. On that and how it all played out, because there were a lot of different storylines. Obviously, we always got to look at Phil. Is this his last chance, maybe, to get the career Grand Slam? He also has we talked about it last week before the tournament started, about his grandfather caddied there. He's won there when it's not a U.S. Open. So Phil was one of the storylines that we were looking at to see. We had Rory was hanging and hanging and hanging, and I think it just shows, too, that if you're going to win a U.S. Open, and back to the point of the USGA being happy or not happy, I think they're happy when they know that they've challenged the best golfers in the world, and they certainly did challenge them, because it was four heavyweight title fight rounds that these guys had to go through. And who survived? Because Rory looked like there were times when he was going to break through, and he is so talented, and you're kind of just going, he can go on a birdie. He can shoot a 64, 63 today the way he's going. And he just never, he would get going, and he'd just fall back and get a bogey or double bogey and miss a putt that you think he's going to make. So I was kind of expecting a little bit more of a charge from Rory. I think he was too. But there were some great golf out there, and I felt personally a little tough for Adam Scott on, I believe it was 13, that he hit that shot so far to the right that it almost hit a volunteer who I don't think even thought he was volunteering for the tournament. He was so far out of bounds and like off the golf course that he's like, why am I in play here? How did I get on the camera?
Not a classic Adam Scott shot, no.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, but it just shows you, I think, you know, I don't know that Adam Scott, he could probably tell you, I haven't hit that shot in 10 years, but U.S. Opens will do that to you, right? They'll go, okay, suddenly you got shots that aren't necessary. And number six, which is a hole that a lot of people think is a birdieable, gettable hole, you know, it gets narrow in that landing area where these guys were hitting. I was actually texting with Art Selinger through a lot of the final round, and Gary Woodland is hitting an iron. It's a par five. He's hitting an iron off of there. And Art was saying, I don't like that strategy. He's obviously playing as a three shot, but can you question now that there is strategy? And Woodland was like, okay, I don't want to hit a hybrid or a three wood or certainly a driver. I'm going to lay way back, because he was way, way back with a two iron or three iron on a par five, where a lot of guys go for it number six and get their birdies. So he just thought, well, I'll play it as a par three and get a good third shot. Maybe I still get my birdie. So I just love the strategy of it and how everybody's head is a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fun. Let's take a quick time out. We've got, as we said, Todd Lewis, our good friend from the Golf Channel, going to join us and talk a little bit more about the U.S. Open and Pebble Beach and other things related to golf. You're listening to Golf Talk America here on PGA Tour Radio, and Frank and I will be back right after this. Stay with us. And welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews, along with Frank Bassett, joining you today. And we now have the pleasure of being joined by Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel, who joins us every now and then when his schedule allows and when we want the very best analysis of what happened in the world of golf. We get to Todd Lewis, and so we're privileged to have him. Todd, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Yeah, hey, Todd, great job at the U.S. Open. We enjoyed the interviews, and your insights were spot on, and just the leading questions that you always are so good with, getting the best out of these guys when you get a chance to get them in front of a mic.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, it's a lot of fun when you have the story. They do develop, storylines develop, whether it was, you know, Brooks Koepka trying to win five majors in nine starts, or Gary Woodland with his, you know, wonderful connection with Amy Bakkerstad, and how that really has erupted on the national stage. So, you know, it's really cool how you just kind of watch them develop, and it's just a matter of you being the informer from the story to the viewer.
When you talk about the U.S. Open, Todd, and the drama that always seems to happen with it because of it being a major and because of what it was, a lot of times it does come down to the course and what happens and how they play the course and what the conditions are. And there's a buildup beforehand. How's the USGA going to set it up, and on and on and on. Frank, we're talking about this before you joined us. And yet this being Pebble Beach was a story because it's Pebble Beach. But other than that, really wasn't much of a story as far as it making it more difficult or being burnt out or the fairways weren't this or the rough wasn't that. So the course itself kind of stepped aside and let the players develop into the storyline and took the course out of play, pretty much.
Yeah, I do think that the USGA did set up the golf course to make it tougher than at least it was for the AT&T Pebble Beach. I mean, the fairway lines were tighter. The rough was pretty gnarly. So if you missed the fairway, you did pay. But it wasn't super easy. I mean, I'm sure the winning score was double digits under par, but I mean, it wasn't a cakewalk out there for those guys. I think the biggest unsung hero for the USGA, which, by the way, hats off to them because they said that even par is not the bar anymore as far as a winning score. But Jason Gore came on to the USGA as kind of an advisor, kind of a liaison between the players and the USGA, because the players on the world stage have given the USGA so much criticism. He kind of walked around the golf course and said, hey, you know, put a pin placement here. That's that, you know, make it playable. You know, let's not make it torturous. So, I mean, he was a pretty positive influence on that course setup that people aren't really talking about. And, you know, as a former player, as a former winner on the PGA Tour, I think Jason Gore deserves a lot of credit in kind of getting into the boardrooms and getting on the golf course with these officials who, you know, historically have made the U.S. Open torturous and now make it a little more playable, but still a very sturdy test in the game.
Do you think that at all that Justin Rose in his play shot a 74 in his final round, was that surprising?
I mean, yeah, he's a great player. You know,
been there before, and people were wondering, okay, could Gary Woodland hang in there? Could he sustain the pressures and everything else that was going on around him? And they thought Justin Rose would be in perfect position. What did you think about Rose's final round?
Well, if you looked at what he was doing the first three rounds, I think he was hitting close to half of the fairways and half the greens at regulation, but he had a super hot putter, so he's putting incredibly well. And it was a little bit of smoke and mirrors, and he'll admit it through the first three rounds. Tee to green, he wasn't very strong, and then ultimately that's going to catch up with you, especially on the pressure on the final day. So I wasn't that surprised. I was curious if he was going to continue to putt as well as he did the first 3 days, but tee to green, he just wasn't doing it that well to win the U.S. Open, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, he said, he admitted, he said, I knew that I couldn't, or he said, he didn't say I knew. He said, I was worried I couldn't sustain it. He said it was a Cinderella story for a while. And that was interesting to hear him say that and post.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, the world's top players understand statistically what they do well and what they don't. And, you know, Justin's obviously one of the best out there. And it's an opportunity for them. You know, it's a glaring weakness. It's something he needs to work on. It's so funny. He was considered one of the best ball strikers a year ago, but his putting was terrible, and now it's just flipped. And isn't golf stupid?
I mean, yes.
It's really
yes.
stupid.
Happened to be yesterday. Absolutely it is. Tim's chipping has been suspect at times, too, so we won't go there.
And yeah, give it time. It'll be great in about 6 months.
Yeah,
it'll be the best part of my game. I'll be like, I have no idea who I even am anymore. Another guy that I think is crazy interesting, and a lot of people paid attention to him from his first round to his final round, 67, is the amateur Victor Hovland, who's now professional and playing this week, and we'll see what he does. A lot of people will predict great things for Victor. Does not play at all like an amateur, did he, Todd? And I guess in today's world, amateurs don't play like amateurs used to play. They're very aggressive. They go for things. They swing hard. It's kind of a different world, even if you're a young guy just out of college.
Yeah, I think I see the same amount of confidence coming out of this young man that I saw with Bryson DeChambeau after he won the U.S. Amateur a couple of years ago. I think he's going to be a force out on the PGA Tour, and I'm not anticipating him, you know, winning two or three PGA Tour events this year. Granted, he still has to get in on sponsor exemptions, but you give him a couple years, I think he's going to be a winner on the PGA Tour and maybe a contender in major championships. He's got, you know, a great mind. Tee to green, he's beautiful, really strong. And he's established plenty of confidence, you know, in the amateur ranks. And you go 400 to U.S. Open, top 10 at the U.S. Open, and be low amateur. Confidence is such a precious commodity in the game of golf, especially when you're about to reposition yourself from amateur status to professional. I mean, you have that as your trampoline into the professional world. I think, you know, it's validation that, man, I can do this, and I think you will.
And breaking a Nicklaus record in the meantime by doing it was pretty incredible. He was shocked when he was informed by one of your counterparts on the Golf Channel that he had done that. He said, I did what? So
yeah, exactly. I think he's got tremendous upside.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about
it. Great kid. Great young man.
How about Rory McIlroy, Todd? And again, we're joined by Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel. Rory was right there going into the weekend and hanging right with Justin Rose. And like I just said about Rose going into the final round, going into the weekend, I thought, well, Rory's coming off a great win in Canada and looking great after the turn or after going into the weekend here, and didn't fall apart, shot 70 and shot 72, but didn't do what he had to do. Is Rory a guy that it seems like he's an anomaly? He can play well. Maybe it's the Jordan Spieth thing. Right now it's putting four rounds together to win a tournament that he can't do. He can put two and three together, but he can't finish it up.
Yeah, you're right. Rory is a bit inconsistent at times. There are times on the weekend where he just drops anchor, and there are times when he shoots 64-61 like he did in Canada to win. I think, obviously, he wants to have that consistency, that freedom, that when he hits the tee on the weekend, especially on Sunday, that he's got it. And I think he's still searching for that, but I don't think he's far off. I was concerned that this golf course, the way it was set up, it's not a very long golf course. It's going to be the governor for a lot of these power players. And Rory's obviously one of them. I didn't think that golf course was set up beautifully for him. I think he actually played pretty well, considering, the setup and everything. But this is the truth. I did a survey on a story that I've been working on of asking players, besides themselves, what player do they feel like is the most difficult to beat on the PGA Tour when that player is clicking, when that player is on? And the two players that were consensus picks by these guys that I asked were Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. So he's always going to be a force whenever he shows up. I'm not concerned about Rory.
Well, Ricky Fowler certainly threw some excitement out there.
He did on day one. Yeah, for sure.
He did. Everybody's favorite. We were all pulling for him because he doesn't have it yet. And it just kind of wheels came off. So that was sad to see.
Well, I still think it's inevitable he's going to win one. I just hope it's fairly soon. I don't want it to become an obstacle for him, a mental one. I will say this about, just for the same reasons that I said about Rory McIlroy, that, Pebble Beach guys will have to hit the spots. They can't just come out there and just bomb it everywhere. I was really impressed with Brooks Koepka. He is a complete player, in my opinion. It's not just him. He can play to these spot golf courses where you have to hit it to spots very, very well. I mean, I think through the bag, he has elevated himself to another dimension now over the last couple of years. I haven't seen him talk the talk and walk the walk, a player talk the talk and walk the walk, like he has since Tiger at the height of his powers. He is that good right now. Now, whether or not he sustains that, that's a different question. But when he was rising up on that leaderboard come Sunday, I promise you the guys were paying attention. I promise you that Gary Woodland was checking out the leaderboard quite often to see where Brooks Koepka was.
Oh, sure. He said he could hear the roars in front of him, too. So, interestingly enough, he was standing right there when Gary Woodland walked into scoring to give him a big hug and congratulations. So, good on Brooks Koepka for being the kind of guy he is. People don't see that side of him mostly, do they, Todd?
No, he's got that killer instinct about him, but he's like Nicklaus. If somebody beats you, okay, hats off to you. You did it. I gave my best, and I think that Brooks said, "Hey, I gave this golf course and the field my best here."
Yeah, fun
week. You saw a lot of guys, right, Frank? After the run, you saw Spieth. I think Xander. A number of the guys were hanging around,
Kuchar,
which is kind of the
Justin Thomas, Matt Kuchar. Yeah,
everybody.
I was right in the middle of them.
Yeah, yeah. Wait around for these guys. Yeah, never used to be right. You're done. Get in the car. Let's get out of here.
He gone.
And now they're all kind of hanging. Yeah, they're all kind of hanging around. And I like
it.
It's good sportsmanship.
I
think it shows camaraderie.
Yeah.
The Justin Thomas, the Matt Kuchars, they're part of that XL Sports Management team. There may have been a Mark Steinberg plane waiting to take them all somewhere. So they were just hanging out.
Oh, they had to wait.
Okay.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, I got you. All right. So
Todd, let me ask you, Todd, do you think Gary now, Woodland, is going to take this and run with it as in other majors? Is this the thing that can propel him, or is he going to be one of those guys that just has a major and goes back to kind of where he was the week before the U.S. Open?
Well, it's interesting. If you watch the evolution of players, they build layers of confidence. Take Patrick Reed, for example. Patrick Reed, Monday qualified on the PGA Tour, finally got his car, finally won the Wyndham Championship, won a WGC event, did what he did at the Ryder Cup. He kept building layers until ultimately he won a major championship. I think you're kind of seeing that same pattern with Gary Woodland. He keeps winning, and this is he was 0 for 27 in top 10s his first 27 major championships, but now over the last year, he's got three top tens in his last four major championship starts, including this victory over the weekend. So he keeps building up these layers. I think he's going to get better. I think that he has two great qualities that make him potentially a multi-major champion. And number one, he has humility, and he's coachable. Butch Harmon, who's coached him for many years, said of all the guys that he works with, Ricky Fowler, Jimmy Walker, Dustin Johnson, just to name a few, that Gary Woodland brings him the most joy because he is always wanting to improve. He's never stuck with his ego more than any other player he's worked with. So I love that. And the fact that he has been a great athlete in other sports, I think he has the right mentality and understanding of what it takes to improve and win. So I think absolutely. Now he's 35 and he may just be reaching his peak right now. He may not even reach his peak until 37 or 8. But I think he's got the great makeup and obviously the talent to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, great player and a great person.
So moving away from the U.S. Open for just a minute, we have to go here. I think you know where I'm going. It's the Kohler event by Phil Mickelson that we just saw on Twitter. I don't know, Todd, if you've seen this yet. He does his fireside chat. Have you seen this?
I saw the headline, but I didn't click. Tell me about it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
Tim, you haven't seen it? Okay. So he's sitting there as if he is in the bathroom, and he's in his bathroom doing a fireside chat, and I don't want to spoil it for our listeners.
Can I just stop you right there? How can you have a fireside chat in the bathroom?
Phil's got a
pretty fancy house.
It's a pretty fancy house. He has couches in there. Wait a minute, you know?
Nice.
He's got a fireplace and a couch in his bathroom?
I don't know the whole story behind this. But I don't want to spoil it. You guys have to watch this thing on Twitter. It's absolutely hilarious. And he tells the story about a tournament that he played in and a tour official that was moving the hole where they had to come back after a delay and complete their round. And he's trying to tell that official, he's out in the fairway, screaming at him, hey, we're not finished. You can't move that hole yet. You can't do that. We have to finish in that position. And I won't take it any further, boys, but this is hilarious. So
really?
I'm not picking Phil this week because I think he's really getting his SAG card now and he's going to get into acting because this was pretty good stuff.
Is this a sponsored thing or something, Frank? Is it like a commercial?
No, it's just Phil doing it. No, it's him doing
what he wants to do. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's hilarious. So
it's just Phil doing what he wants to do. Yeah, well.
Here comes Hollywood.
Phil can do that stuff.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, we're joined by Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel talking a little bit about the U.S. Open. And looking forward to the Travelers Championship. By the way, I just wanted to throw in, too, back when I was doing some play-by-play for PGA Tour Radio, I was at the Deutsche Bank outside of Boston as one of the FedEx Cup playoff events a few years ago, and I was following Woodland for a number of holes. He was playing really, really well. I think it was the second round. And much like the Amy story we were talking about, he was so gracious and nice and handing things out of his bag to people as he's walking by. And he doesn't do it with a big smile on his face. He's kind of got a stern look, right? And so I think if you look at his face, you wouldn't always know that because he looks like he's in business, right? He's serious about stuff. But so nice to everybody and letting the ladies that are holding the sign card go in front of, I mean, just you just kind of watch him and you looked at him and you said, that's just a nice guy. You could just tell he was a really, really good guy. And you wanted to pull for him, so I couldn't be happier for Gary Woodland finally winning his first major, because even back then you could tell he was a great guy and loved the game. So anyway, good for him. But I did want to ask you, Todd, as we keep talking about a little bit about the U.S. Open, but looking ahead to the Travelers Championship, they do a pretty good job of getting a big field and a pretty good field for an event that comes right after a major when a lot of guys want to hit the beach.
Yeah, I mean, the Travelers Championship over the last 5 years or so, maybe even back farther than that, maybe 7-8 years, they have really elevated themselves as one of the best regular PGA Tour stops on the schedule. I mean, they really have the ability that they have to bring in these great stars to play is tremendous. And not only that, they put on a great show. They have concerts. The golf course, if you watch this week, the golf course is a lot of fun. I mean, you've got drivable par fours. You've got, players love the course. They've really stepped up. I mean, it's a fun tournament to watch, especially coming off a major championship, as you mentioned. It's an opportunity. It's kind of like it's not quite Hilton Head like after the Masters where you can totally decompress. You know, you're on an island and you're riding around a bicycle. If you've been to Hilton Head to see that event, you can, where players and caddies and whomever, it's like, oh, man. You know, I got oxygen back in my life now after Augusta National. But it's not far from it. I mean, it's a good show.
Yeah, the RBC is always fun. But, yeah, I've not been to the Travelers. I know you have. Tim, I don't know if you've been up there or not, but we need to put that on our list for next year to go.
Yeah, it's a good show. I've been there, yeah.
You've got Bubba, defending champion. Spieth won a couple years ago with a shot that still resonates for a lot of people, and they enjoy it. Back to the Open, and at least the finishing in the final round. Tiger Woods put on a good show, Todd, at least in the last his last nine holes. Still finished way back, if you will, and tie for 21st place. So not what he was hoping for or expecting. But what's your thoughts on Tiger and how he attacked Pebble Beach and how he went at it? His putter wasn't really working for him pretty much the entire tournament. But what did you think about his four rounds?
Well, you know, I'm just kind of interested in watching this develop so far this year, his scheduling and where he plays. He admitted that, you know, playing in those cold temperatures didn't really help his body at all. He seems to be a little defensive with that. So, you know, I don't think he played poorly, obviously. I think he had a top 20 finish, but I'd never thought I felt like he was going to be in contention the whole week. But, you know, he's going to now take, it seems like he's going to take the rest of the time off until the Open, which is another cold weather venue in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush. So I don't know how well he's going to play there. But I think what's interesting is after the Open, if you look at scheduling, Commissioner Monahan is going to really press Tiger along with all the top stars to play the WGC FedEx event in Memphis, which is the week after. The reason why is because FedEx obviously puts up a lot of sponsorship money for the FedEx Cup. And this is the first time that FedEx has been a title sponsor for a WGC event in FedEx headquarters in Memphis. So, you know, will Tiger play there? If he plays there, then he'll likely take the following week off, the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, and then play the three playoff events. So that's five events in two different countries that he'll play in a six-week span. That is a bunch for him, especially.
Yeah.
He's only played back-to-back weeks once this year, and that was L.A. and Mexico. So, if he's going to continue to be so defensive with his body, I'm interested if he's going to play in Memphis or if he's going to play all three of those playoff events in a row. So, it'll be interesting to watch him develop.
Interestingly enough, you talk about Memphis, and that's, of course, one of my favorite tournaments, and I used to play in the Pro-Am there growing up in that area. We're there every year. Memphis is used to a big party, as you know, Todd, and the FedEx St. Jude Classic, which used to be in the old Danny Thomas, which was a celebrity tournament. It's going to be a different Memphis this year with all these players, and the crowds are going to be absolutely enormous in Memphis, Tennessee for this level of players they're going to get in there for the WGC. It's going to be crazy.
I hope they get all the big stars. I really do, considering, like I mentioned, it's the first FedEx WGC event there in Memphis. But I am interested to see how many players make that trip from Northern Ireland immediately.
Wow.
From the 50-degree temperatures in Northern Ireland to the 90-degree temperatures in July.
90 humidity also. 99,
And considering that the playoffs are right around the corner. I mean, this is where the intensity of that schedule is upon. And not to mention, I mean, I don't want to knock Wyndham either. Wyndham is a great tournament, too. I mean, there's a $2 million bonus to the regular season FedEx Cup winner that'll be up for grabs in Greensboro, too. So, you know, Rory McIlroy's already said, if I'm in contention to win that, I'm going to play Greensboro. So, I mean, there's a very intense part of the schedule that's going to pick up in a few weeks, and I'm interested to see how players, what they'll play and how they'll react.
Yeah, I certainly think that the sponsor for Memphis can push an aircraft out there to get everybody back if they want to.
Yeah, I think FedEx is doing okay money-wise. I think they can do just about anything.
I mean, it's funny
you say that. You got a second for a quick story?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure.
All right, so this is funny. So I had, speaking of money and being out of my element, there is so much money on the Monterey Peninsula, people who's like titans in industry.
Yeah.
So I met these lovely people who are members at Monterey Peninsula Country Club, which is right beside Pebble, and is part of the three-course rotation for the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. And they said, hey, Todd, we're playing golf Saturday morning. Why don't you play with us at Monterey Peninsula? Now, if you've ever had a chance to play Monterey Peninsula Country Club, you understand this. If you get the opportunity, take it, because it is one of my favorite golf courses on the planet. We're supposed to play the Dunes course. Well, it's Saturday. I gotta cover the tournament. And they said, I asked, what time are you teeing off? They're like, oh, we have an 8:30 tee time. I'm like, ah, I can't play 18 holes. Well, come play 9 with us. I'm like, okay. Well, I got a buddy who's going to play with us too. I'm like, okay. So I jump in the cart with this guy. I'm not going to mention his name. And we're going down the first fairway after we hit our tee shots. We're getting to know each other. Then we come to the second tee. And the guy, two guys that I met the previous night and this guy who was in the cart with me, they start talking about moving money in the trillions. The trillions. And I'm like, first off, Todd, don't open your mouth. These guys are way smarter than you. So let them finish their conversation. But because I have an inquisitive mind and I get paid to ask questions, we're going down the second fairway after hitting our tee shot. And I'm with the guy I just met. And I say, hey, if you don't mind, what do you do? He's like, oh, I'm a treasurer for a company. I'm like, oh, okay. What's the company? Apple. Apple.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And he's like, you know, talking about how many hundreds of billions of dollars they just have in cash. And I'm just, you talk about feeling small. And then he proceeded to show me his house on one of the holes is a beautiful 6-car garage. That's like his fourth home, wow. I'm sure. But he couldn't have been nicer. Sure. He couldn't have been nicer. But good Lord, you talk about, oh my God.
Yeah, if I had been in that cart with him, I would have said, well, now what is the growing season for you guys?
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're talking Macintosh?
Yeah,
apples
yeah,
are
Macintosh.
Yeah. He was wonderful, though. He was
sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He was a really cool That's guy. Too I really enjoyed fun. Talking to him.
So, Todd, did you reach for your wallet and say, hey, $5 in the next hole, big guy? Put some pressure on him.
You know?
He would have folded like a cheap tent.
Yeah, he takes lessons from Butch Harmon. I mean, he's just, you know.
Sure he does.
He's great. God bless him.
At his own course.
Good for him. I'm sure he worked for it, you know. So good for him.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Good story to finish on there, Todd. We appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time. And as always, I love the stories, but I love also the anecdotes and the things that are going on the inside. So you give everybody a little insight into what happened, in this case, at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. And always entertaining, always fun. And we do appreciate your time once again, Todd.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Be safe, and we'll see you soon. See you in Memphis, I hope.
Talk to you soon.
You got it. See you guys.
All right, pal. See ya.
All right. Thank you. Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel.
Good story.
Yeah, I got to ask. I got
100 on this one.
What do you do? What do you do? I got to ask.
He said, I'm not going to give the name away, but.
God, moving trillions of dollars.
Well, that's.
That'd catch your attention, wouldn't it?
I've had a story like that before where I was playing with somebody who didn't know who I was really playing with and found out afterwards. And I won't say who it was, but he was. Yeah. It was that kind of guy, and it was just incredible.
Yeah,
just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
well, it's like the old movie Sabrina. Remember the Hollywood movie Sabrina that was remade with Harrison Ford, where the limousine driver became a millionaire because he drove the titan of business around.
Listened to the boss's.
He just listened
to the boss's stock tips.
Yeah. Just listened. Yeah. Didn't ask. Just listened.
That's what. So Todd decided he's going to invest in this little Apple company.
Yeah, that stock's kind of hard to pay for. Grab some Amazon while you're at it.
See if you can make something out of that little company there. So,
that's
cool. That's neat. But
Todd's the best.
He's right, though. That Monterey Peninsula area has got to be
ridiculous.
I mean, what's past trillions? I guess what's the next number after trillions?
It's sick.
Gazillions?
Sick.
As far as the total income of that whole area, it's crazy how much money is in that area there. Because like you said, there are people that are living there that certainly you know. I mean, remember that the hole at end of 10 on Pebble Beach used to be Gene Hackman's home. He's now sold it. But I think it's on the market for like $78 million or something like that. I mean, that's the kind of money that – I get it. That's an exceptional house. But there's some serious
money
out in the
Monterey Peninsula. It's like 14 at Riviera if you go down the road to L.A. 14 at Riviera is Mel Brooks. He lives there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary, but kind of cool. Right? I mean, all those stories. So.
But Phil Mickelson's going to get his SAG card. He's getting his SAG card, I promise. You got to see this.
Yeah, gotta watch it. So what do you say? Where is it? Just go to YouTube.
Go to Twitter.
A fireside chat.
Follow Phil on Twitter. He's on Twitter now.
Okay.
Fireside chat with Phil. Phil's fireside chat.
Fireside chat with Phil.
Brought to you by Kohler.
Wow.
It's just funny. I'm sorry. He's good.
Oh,
he's
well,
funny. He's entertaining.
Is that what you're saying? By Kohler?
No. I was making that up.
Oh, you're just saying
sorry,
it's a
Herb
joke.
Kohler.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No. Mr. Kohler, I apologize.
Okay.
No.
It wouldn't be a bad idea, though, would it?
Yeah, well, I always have great ideas.
You probably just gave Kohler a good idea. They're like, hey, let's call Phil.
I'm going to call
it bathroom chats.
Yeah, okay. Fireplace, couch. Yeah, no, he's got a fancy house.
Yeah. He's got everything in there.
The library's in there, bathroom. Too.
Yeah, everything. Never leaves the bathroom. All right, well, that was good. That was good. We enjoyed it. Again, the PGA champion or the PGA Tour continues at the Travelers Championship, TPC River Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, really good field. Victor Hovland. Now a pro, so we'll see how that pans out for him. And when's the first time he could win? Art Selinger, by the way, I mentioned earlier, he predicts that Hovland may win this year. He thinks he's that good, and he thinks he's
this
that
season.
Unfazed. Yes, this season. He's that unfazed by the guys around him. And I think we saw a little bit of that at Pebble Beach because that was the first time I think a lot of people got to see this player. And because, again, U.S. amateurs, not everybody sees, and college golf, not everybody watches. But this is the first time a lot of people got to, and he didn't seem, he always kind of had his hat on Lee Trevino-like, right? It was kind of like a little high up on
yep.
his head. Yep,
a little high. Yeah.
Always had
and
a nice,
the OSU.
Always had a nice smile on his face.
Wrinkled OSU shirt, sweaty. That's all going to change. That'll be different this week. Wait and see.
Yeah.
Much different. I bet he was he was smiling a lot, but I bet he was grinning from ear to ear when he started seeing all those zeros after his performance at the U.S. Open.
I wonder what I don't even know the answer to this because, you know, there's a lot of perks of just being in a PGA Tour event, right?
Yeah.
Which is that they need to give you a Cadillac or a Lexus SUV, a nice
BMW
to
drive. Yeah.
Do you get that as an amateur?
I don't think as an amateur you
can
do.
Can you as an amateur?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. So even that little bit, right, is kind of might be an eye-opener going, this is my car for the week?
He's also going to find out.
Like, wow.
There are a lot of pranks that happen in the player parking lot to the cars. So I remember in Eastlake a couple of years ago what Ricky Fowler did to some cars and what they did back
really?
To him. And it was hilarious. Yeah. I'm talking bananas up the tailpipes. And I mean, yeah, it's wrapping it
Eddie
with
Murphy
caution
stuff.
Tape. Oh, yeah. Eddie Murphy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of fun.
He's got to be welcome to the PGA Tour. But anyway, keep an eye on Victor Hovland.
Rookie.
See how he does. Spieth, Phil, Bubba, Justin, a lot of good names playing at the Travelers Championship. It all starts tomorrow in Cromwell. Couldn't be any further away than Pebble Beach for these guys. They have to get all the way across the country. But so be it. That's okay. It'll work.
It's going to be fun.
All right, Frank, I think we're out of time. I think we're done. I think we're good.
I think so. I'm going to play golf. I'm heading out to Bluegrass. Are you going to play today? Club Corp.
Good for you. I am going to play. Yep, don't forget Club Corp. Check them out. Go to clubcorp.com, and you can see all the golf courses. Just do the click down in the top right-hand corner. Whatever area you're in, you'll see the courses that are members of Club Corp. And when you're a member of one, you're a member of all. You get privileges at all these different courses around the country. It is a really, really sweet deal, and you're going to love it. Go to clubcorp.com to find out more. All right, thanks everybody for joining us. We do appreciate it. Thank you to Todd Lewis with the Golf Channel for, as always, entertaining us. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for listening. And please remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.